Welcome to Living in Hi-Fi. I'm Steve.
And I'm Felicity. This is a podcast about records. This week's album is Mambo by Ima Sumac. This was an original release on Capitol Records in 1954. The catalog number is M11892, and our copy is a re-release from 1987.
So this album comes by listener request, and I'm really glad that it was requested because this is the perfect kind of album for this podcast, and I'm really glad that we have an opportunity to talk about Ima Sumac. And I'm not sure, I'm guessing that you were the one who introduced me to Ima Sumac, Felicity?
Probably. This comes from my interest in Exotica. So I first heard about Ima Sumac through the Ultra Lounge recordings on CD from like the late 90s. And I don't know if where this particular album that we have comes from. Do you know where it comes from?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. So it has some ring wear around it, which makes me think that it was either sitting in the bottom of a pile in a record store or in somebody's home for a while. And we bought it for $350, apparently. It could have come from just about anywhere. And I, you know, it's a re-release, and I didn't even really notice that, except when we were getting ready to do this podcast, there was a big honking barcode on the back of it.
Yeah, and it's strange because this re-release says that it is selections from the album Mambo, and it appears that it has all of the tracks with the exception of one single track. So I'm not sure why they left that one off.
Which one is left off?
Cha-Cha Gitano.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not sure why, you know, why they omitted that from this repressing. Would you like to tell us a little bit about this album, Felicity?
Yeah, so this cover has a picture of Ima Sumac, and it's this pretty extreme lighting. She's sort of orangish red, and she's got this super corseted dress on and kind of got zombie arms, honestly. But she's a diva and super expressive singer, so she can do whatever she wants with her arms. And it has Ima Sumac Mambo in big 60s letters with sort of pointy serifs on it. And the background is this dark sort of abstract thing. It looks like she might be standing in some palm trees or something. And this embodies, I think, the peak of Exotica. This is a recording from 1954. And so it's like mid-50s, early 60s is when Exotica was a big thing. And this looks like, even though Ima Sumac is from Peru and Mambo is in fact from Cuba, like the photo looks sort of Polynesian-esque. So it's like, this is exotic music. This is basically what this said. And this promises what's to come on the inside. I mean, Capitol Records has this Hollywood production of a lot of Exotica album, so it's Latin music, but it's got this backing of a big band behind it. And the back cover has some more of those like palm leaves and this oddball poem about Mambo, and then a track list and a barcode, which indicates that it is not the original releases from the 80s.
All right, well, let's take a listen to our first clip. This is my pick, and I picked Gopher. So I picked this song because I think that this, to me, is sort of the quintessential Ima Sumac, and I think that this is the the track that if I were to, you know, just sort of think of an Ima Sumac song, this would be the one I would go to. And I think it really demonstrates her range and her abilities. I like that it's got the, you know, sort of the growling, but also you get to hear some of her vocal range. And I think that it's just amazing. Like, at first, I didn't realize that she had such an amazing range, and I just assumed that there was, like, multiple people collaborating on this, and that there were, like, some guys doing, like, the grunts and things at the beginning. But no, it turns out that she actually has, like, a 5-octave vocal range, and everything that you hear that in the song is her. So I think it's pretty impressive. What do you think, Felicity?
Agreed. This is a great pick to showcase Ima Sumac's amazing vocals. And what I think is remarkable about her is, you know, a 5-octave vocal range is a lot, but it's not like superhuman. Like, a lot of opera singers can get that range. Mariah Carey has a similar range, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And what I think really makes Ima Sumac stand out is the quality of her voice. Like you mentioned, it has, like, she has this really kind of growly low tone, but then her higher tones can be really sweet sounding and really lyrical and gentle. So
and I think she has, like, really great control over
it. Yeah, exactly.
When she sings low, I feel like it's really got a great quality to it. But when she sings high, it feels controlled. It's not shrieky. It just seems like, yeah, well controlled.
Yeah, exactly. And she's using, like, the full range through the whole song. It's not like when I hear a Mariah Carey song, like, she's, like, singing, she's kind of, like, normal. And then there's, like, that end of the...
Yeah, it's like a gimmicky thing.
Yeah, it's like there's, like, the big moment where she's, like, all, like, woo-hoo-hoo! Or whatever. But I think, like, the way Ima Sumac uses her voice, it's consistent through the whole song. She's using her entire range all of the time, and that's pretty remarkable.
And you can hear her. It's not just, right, it's not just, like, her singing normal and then, like, boom, let me go up 3 octaves or whatever. Yeah. It's like she can, like, go anywhere in between there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so what can you tell us about Ima Sumac?
So Ima Sumac was born either in September of 1922 or 1923. So I'm not sure why we don't know when she was born, but it seems like maybe she was a little
cagey about it.
Yeah, secretive about her actual date of birth. And then she died in November of 2008. She was born in Peru, and she claimed to be an Incan princess descended from the last Peruvian emperor, Atahualpa. And the Peruvian government endorsed this claim. So she's legit a Incan princess. She kind of carries herself that way. Like, she is absolutely a diva. She's earned it, not just through her heritage, but because she's got this remarkable set of pipes. So she married and then divorced and then remarried and then redivorced again the director of her orchestra, Moises Vivanco, and he is the arranger of this album, even though it's not noted on our particular copy. And he arranged a lot of pieces of music for her before she released recordings on Capitol Records. He was the band director for her in Peru, and so she sang with his orchestra in Peru before she came over to the U.S. And then in the 1950s, she made these recordings on Capitol with the direction of her husband, and then also with Les Baxter, directed the recording on her first album, The Voice of the Extabe, and she also had the backings of the orchestra of Billy May. And later in her career, she basically sounds like she just did a lot of touring all over the world. In 1972, she released another album called Miracles. And after that, I don't think she made any future releases of full-length albums. She did, I think, record for some other things and mostly just toured around and showcased her remarkable voice.
All right. Well, do we want to listen to your clip?
Sure. So I picked Malambo Number 1. This is the first track on the B-side.
All right. So let's take a listen.
This track because it showcases her ability to work in this like growly low range and also in this sweet higher register. And the song, I looked at the translation, it's really simple. You can hear her sing in English, "Oh, what they do in Peru," and the rest of the vocals are like, "You're my sweetheart, let's kiss, let's dance." So it's like just kind of a sweet pop dancey song.
Yeah, so this is the song where you make a liar out of me, because in a previous episode, I said that I didn't really like brass. This is like the most brassy song ever, but I really love the orchestration on this album. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I really love it. I mean, her vocal talents are amazing, but I really like, you know, the timpani and the brass, and so I guess, you know, I don't know, what can I say? But right here, the brass is front and center, and it's like unabashedly in your face, and I think it just really works really well, and I think it's a great compliment for her vocals.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the things that I love about this era of music. I love that there is both this traditional Latin music and Latin influence, and also this very Hollywood big band sound. I've been listening to this other podcast called Buddy's Lounge recently, and it's like 30 minutes of pop music from the 50s and 60s, a little bit of stuff from the late 40s. And it's the thread that ties everything together. The music that I love has got this big band sound underneath of it, even though it might have like Latin influence, it might have a Polynesian influence, it might have this influence from Peru, like it may have a specific thing, but it's all tied together by this big band sound.
All right. So this album, like I mentioned, definitely a great album. And I don't know, there was a period there where we didn't really have a turntable that was in operation, and they came out with a sort of a re-release of this album on CD called Mambo and More. And so it had the original tracks plus a bunch of sort of B-sides and
outtakes,
exactly. And so, I mean, it's really interesting to hear some of the outtakes, but I think that that album was also the one that sort of taught me to appreciate albums as they're originally conceived. Because a lot of things that, I guess, when they were recorded on LP, you know, you have a limit of about 22 minutes per side. And so if you come up with a single album, it's like maybe 44 minutes. And in CD, you can get up to, say, 80 minutes. And so a lot of times when things came out on CD, they would do like they did with a lot of Beach Boys releases, where they would sort of double up two albums onto one CD. Or they would do something like this, where it's like you get the album with a bunch of outtakes or rarities or B-sides or unreleased material. And even though that stuff is interesting, I think that just the original album with the original track listing has a sort of completeness about it. And I feel like it's actually a kind of a shame that with the extra tracks, it sort of detracts from that. So I think that that made me appreciate, you know, a lot of other albums come out with like deluxe editions and maybe they have a few bonus tracks. And actually now I think I seek out the sort of just like the regular version of the album, because it sort of presents the material as it was originally sort of envisioned by the producer or the artist.
Yeah, I agree. And that Mambo and More CD, it's cool that there are some alternate versions of the orchestration of some of the songs. And it's like, oh, I can see like they chose to go in a different direction with the instrumentation on this song. But also, there's some where it's just like, okay, I love Ima Sumac, but hearing like the exact vocal track, like four times in a row, it gets to be a little much.
Exactly.
And so I prefer to listen to the original album in this case. And it does have a nice flow to it. It feels complete as it is. I like the other stuff is interesting, but that's exactly what it is. It's other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, like when you get really into an artist and you try to research it and learn as much about it as you can, and you sort of go in deep, but sometimes you come out and you find that you sort of wish you didn't learn as much as you knew about it, because the album sort of had mystique about it. And when you get in deep, you learn that maybe the artist, you know, has some problematic aspects or whatever. And like, you know, it sort of takes some of that shine off of it. And so I don't know. I mean,
is that what we're doing with the show? Are we like, are we undoing the mystique of things?
I hope not.
Yeah, I don't think so.
And I mean, I don't think that that's the case for Ima Sumac. I mean, I think that it didn't lessen my appreciation of it anymore, but it just made me appreciate the original album even more than I already did.
Yeah.
So definitely, I think that this is an album that's worth picking up. I don't know. I mean, Ima Sumac, I think, is a little unusual, but I don't think we've had all that much trouble finding her stuff at record stores. So you probably could find one of her albums somewhere.
Yeah, I think we run into the LPs on occasion when we're out and about. So this one would be not hard to find on LP. And like we said, there's this Mambo and More on CD, and there's a whole bunch of stuff available on CD and streaming online if you want to just get in there and listen. Yep. We've got links to all that on the show notes.
Yeah, which you can find at livinginhifi.com/episode/10. And let us know what you think. Send us a message on Twitter at livinginhifi, or if you have a longer correspondence, you can send it to us at feedback@livinginhifi.com. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/livinginhifi. And we hope to see you next time. What do we have next on deck, Flissy?
So on deck, we've gonna shift gears a little bit, head back in the US for some twisting.
All right, see you next time. Thanks for listening.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.